The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
To the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, greetings. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Goofy Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker. I just need more muscle relaxer.
Sharon has been dealing with some back issues the last couple of days. And
I've been thinking about it. I think it may. Do I need to turn this mic around? I'm going to turn it back the other way.
Yeah, probably best.
Yeah, there you go. I've been thinking about this, and it occurred to me that either yesterday or the day before when I bent down to pick up Sam mm-hmm. weighs about 20 pounds, mm-hmm. that it was a little uncomfortable. So that may have been it. I don't know. But it could be that it's been kind of ouchy for a while anyway. Oh, my back. It's just as old as I am. The poor thing.
It's been with you since the beginning.
It's been with me. Been with me the whole time.
Yeah. And so the muscle relaxers are helping, but they're not really conducive to
I make no guarantees as to what I may say or not say. I may be just sitting here drooling. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll try to muddle through today as we record this on Sunday, August 26th of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting things in the world.
Today's National Dog Day.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And these are referred to as the dog days of summer,
but it is actually the dog, the four-legged canine variety. Today's National Dog Day.
Hmm. And Sam is celebrating by taking a nap on the floor here.
And
in the
why not?
Bunker.
That's sure. what I say. By the way, I do want to apologize. I don't know what it's going to do in the post when Derek finishes with this recording, but there is a little bit of crackle that we've been hearing in our headphones. Yeah. This afternoon, and it could be my mic.
Well, I'm pretty sure it is, and we've been dealing with it off and on. For some reason, it disappeared for a good long while, and then today it just popped back up again. We had this issue before. It just never really shows up.
Was it there before when I was taking muscle relaxers?
Don't know about the muscle relaxers.
Do you think that has anything to do with it?
Well,
there are scientists who would claim we see a causal effect.
Exactly, because the muscle relaxers and the crackle in the microphone, the short,
occur at the same time,
so therefore one must follow the other.
Yeah,
so you're probably right. You're probably right. Well, and then that reminds me, I just stumbled across a video. I'm not going to play it because it's just too much time, and we've been over this ground before. But Bill Nye, the science guy, recorded a video for something called the Big Think Project, in which he says that creationism is not suitable to be taught to young children. Because
is it child abuse?
Well, it would hold back the entire nation, apparently, because if you don't understand evolution, you really can't grasp the life sciences, biology, and all of that, which shocks me because you are degreed in molecular biology.
Yeah.
And yet you believe in creation.
Yes.
Cognitive dissonance cannot happen.
And I was not the only one in my class.
And it's a shame because, you know, Bill Nye, the science guy, is entertaining, and he does teach some very interesting and sometimes complex scientific principles mm-hmm. to children.
And he teaches them in a very, approachable, friendly
sure.
way. I mean, children are naturally drawn to him.
Yeah. Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah.
Nicole grew up loving Bill Nye. She still loves mm-hmm. Bill Nye, the science mm-hmm. guy. But he's flat out said that if you teach children creationism, they won't be able to understand the life sciences, biology, and that will then pull America cost America its lead in scientific research and development. And he laments the fact that the United States is alone among developed nations in believing in creationism. Saying, well, sorry, Bill, but, you know, Jesus said to expect this, so we're not going to get too upset
about
that.
So we're not really surprised.
Nope.
You recently did an interview with a scientist who knows his stuff, paleontologist.
Yeah, Aaron Judkins. Yeah. And that led to some interesting discussion on the by email. Aaron has done some research on the Paluxy River trackways at Glen Rose, Texas. And there are those who believe that the trackways show human and dinosaur footprints side by side in the same layers. Mm-hmm.
Which would mean that they lived alongside each other.
And there are those, you know, obviously evolutionists will reject the idea, but there are also young Earth creationists who do not accept that the trackways at Glen Rose show human footprints. Dr. John Morris, who's the president of the Institute for Creation Research, in fact, in the 80s had written a book about the trackways. And then in 1986, he wrote an article in which he withdrew withdrew the book from publication and said that it is no longer appropriate for creationists to use the tracks at the Paluxy River as evidence that humans and dinosaurs coexisted or as evidence for creation, because he feels that the evidence isn't sound enough, isn't convincing enough to really support the claim. Now, having said that, Dr. Morris still believes that humans and dinosaurs coexisted. Mm-hmm. He is a young Earth creationist. He just believes that there is better, more concrete evidence out there. And he points to things such as the soft tissue preserved in the T-Rex leg bone, which we discussed during that program. And there are other things out there, such as artistic representations from around the world that show humans and dinosaurs together that date back several, you know, couple thousand years or more. So,
those are cavemen. What do they know?
So, you know, there is evidence that is difficult for creationists, young Earth creationists, to explain. There is also evidence that is very difficult for evolutionists to explain.
Mm-hmm.
As believers in Jesus Christ, followers of the Lord, and believing that the Bible is telling us the way it was, we should not be afraid to confront such evidence.
We have a tough enough time taking, if you were to take a young, very bright young man from the inner city and ask him to explain a farm implement from 200 years ago, he'd likely just stare at you and say, I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. As I find quite often when I, you know, now that I've ventured out of the city to these highways and hedges here in southern Illinois, I've done more gravel road driving the last year than I had the previous 50 years of my
life. Didn't know you were a time traveler, did you?
No, in some places I sort of feel that way, especially as we get up towards Arthur, where you see
a lot of the Amish.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're not far from the heart of Amish country here in Illinois, a very large settlement of Amish just northwest of us. And you go down those county highways and you unless you're looking for it, you don't really notice it, but you begin to realize after a while that all these homes, which are clearly anywhere from 90 to 120 years old, these farmsteads, don't have the power line. I mean, they're overhead power lines along the road, but they don't connect over to the houses.
Yeah, yeah, strange, isn't
it? So,
well, I got to ask you a question since we're talking about evolutionary science, and I know that that connects into what I think some Christians like to think of as creation science, but it's actually intelligent design, which is in many camps considered aliens coming down and mingling their seed with ours. Boy, that sounds like Genesis 6, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The reason I bring this up is not only were you just discussing, I've got cotton mouth. It's a side effect of that pill. Not only are you discussing that, but we just had a story coming out today and over the last few days from Mars.
Oh, yeah.
A little Curiosity has been taking pictures and movies, and something and some things in some of the snaps, there's movement in the sky.
That's interesting.
You wouldn't expect that on Mars, would you? You wouldn't expect anything other than something we have sent there to be roaming around.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the pictures, too, which there are folks who are
claiming
fossilized human finger. It looks like a sandal or a shoe.
It sort of looks like a finger with a nail on it. But I think some of those actually are trying to make the point that this is probably not Mars.
Yeah, yeah. And there are those out there who will say, gee, you know, there's a reason that this looks an awful lot like the desert in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just take NASA at their word And we'll get into more NASA discussion here in a second. But let's just take them at their word for this one and say, yep, there's a rover on Mars. Mm-hmm. Curiosity is roaming around. What is that that's moving? There are some of those photos that it's clear that there is a disc-shaped object, and in some cases, four or five of them moving from frame to frame.
No, I've not seen these pictures.
And they're not moving in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
They're moving like this. Watch my finger.
Oh, okay.
So it's not...
erratically.
Exactly. So it's not space debris that's shooting by.
Not, and...
You wouldn't think so.
NASA's claiming that they are dead pixels.
Dead pixels. That's what they keep saying. Well, no.
I
mean, I suppose it's possible, but...
Why are the images showing light on one side and shadow on the other?
Exactly. You wouldn't expect that from dead pixels.
Huh.
It really looks like a spherical object.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's a series of pictures taken from a video here, from a NASA video, that show a speck of light moving from one side to the other.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting, isn't it? And, of course, this ties into, and like I teased a second ago, that we're going to continue with a NASA discussion because Neil Armstrong just passed away.
That's true. At the age of, 82?
82,
yeah.
He just had his birthday, in fact. I think August 5th was his birthday.
Well, a pioneer, certainly.
A very tight-lipped man, I'll tell you. He did not want to give interviews. He, even right after the fact, he really didn't want to be in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
The excuse that I always heard was that he was an extremely private, shy man.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the speculation among those who believe that the moon landings were hoaxes is that he just kept his mouth shut so he didn't have to explain any of the anomalies that have been pointed out by some researchers.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see what happens
like,
over the next
flag waving
few
in a
years.
Non-existent breeze and things like that.
Well, just can they get through the Van Allen belt? I mean, just scientifically speaking, could we really at that point in time have gotten to, can we get through it now? I mean, we can send probes, assuming that there's one really on Mars and a few others that have gone around taking pictures. I don't know if humans can do it.
Well, yeah, I've not really done any extensive research on this, but the radiation level in the Van Allen belt is supposedly, I don't want to...
enough to fry you.
Yeah, let's see. Well, I have to do some research on that because that's something
Well,
that's
I remember
worth
it. That we actually looked into it pretty deeply a few years ago, and you and I both came to the conclusion that it seemed unlikely that at that time we got through it. We also managed to get there with the computing power of, I don't know, an iPod.
Well, yeah. And according to the Book of Knowledge, the Apollo missions that went through the Van Allen belt only exposed the astronauts to low levels of radiation because they were in the heavily shielded lunar module as they flew through it. Or the command module, rather, which was heavily shielded. I was not aware that the module was...
I've seen the module up close.
Well, you know, this will be worth an interview on A View from the Bunker. So we'll
there
do some
go.
Digging into that.
There you go.
Yeah. So anyway, a lot of things going on. Isaac
is
out in the Gulf.
Well, let's talk about Isaac. And in fact, you and I were saying earlier today that I was looking at some of the tracks that made it look like it was going to swing once it goes through whatever of the ever. I'll come in again. Whatever place it lands in the Gulf, and that may be New Orleans, that it could track up into the Midwest. It was Ike, which is a nickname for Isaac, that pummeled the Midwest a few years ago.
Yeah, it came through...
I have to go get something to drink. I'll be back.
Sure.
Carry on.
Came through Shelbyville, Indiana, and brought with it high winds. And I remember that very distinctly because Sam was insistent that we needed to go for a walk as the remnant of Hurricane Ike was coming through central Indiana. Knocked down a lot of limbs, some power lines around us. Really didn't affect us too badly, but the Ohio River Valley got hit pretty hard. Cincinnati was hit really hard. A number of customers of the company that I work for were in Cincinnati, and our drivers pulling 50-foot trailers loaded with steel had to turn around and come back because they could not travel through Cincinnati. for a day or two after the storm. Hurricane warnings, as we record this on the evening of Sunday, August 26th, have been issued for New Orleans. Fear that this was going to disrupt the Republican National Convention in Tampa have pretty much passed, but the hurricane force wind speed probabilities over the next 120 hours, which is next 5 days, approaching 40 to 50%, according to the National Weather Service, for New Orleans and that area. And I did read one forecaster who said that based on the track that is predicted right now, that this could rival Katrina in terms of the potential damage for New Orleans. It is right now targeting that area, which would be Bay St. Louis, New Orleans, about 3 days out, 2.5 days out, so sometime Tuesday, Wednesday, based on current forecasts. Expected to make landfall somewhere between noon and 2 p.m. Wednesday, if I'm reading this correctly.
So where is Rudy Giuliani right now?
Yeah, if he's in your area, run.
Run!
Yeah, hurricane warnings extending from the panhandle of Florida across the southern tips of Alabama, Mississippi, and halfway across the state of Louisiana, which, of course, includes the Bayou area and all of New Orleans. So New Orleans, Baton Rouge, I would imagine. Yeah, this could be bad depending upon the predicted wind speed for Isaac, which at this point is still just a tropical storm. But again, they are expecting at least a 50-50 chance of hurricane force winds reaching Louisiana and Mississippi within the next 5 days. So, yeah, not going to be a fun time to be down that way. And I suspect after the experience with Katrina that residents there will be a little more inclined to get out of the way than they were back in during Katrina. And Katrina was, what, 2007 or 6?
No, I can't remember.
Because I know we talked about it, and it was 2005.
You know, I'm on one of my favorite sites, the Morphed Integrated Microwave Imagery.
Okay.
The Mimic site.
Right.
Which is where you can go. It's out of Wisconsin. You can go there to watch the storm track, and they update it very, very frequently. Mm-hmm. You can either do a Java or an animated GIF comparison. And that is where Derek and I and many others have seen very strange anomalies as the storm has moved. Or grown stronger suddenly. So that's a great site to keep an eye on. We'll link to that, but the way you can find it is how I find it. Just go into Google and type in Mimic and Storm, M-I-M-I-C.
Yeah. And the reference to Tropical Storm Isaac is from a blog post at Forbes, the Forbes website, Forbes.com, from Joe Bastardi. Alan Lamy and Michael Barak. Joe Bastardi was the guy was always on Fox, giving updates on
weather.
Yeah, right, from AccuWeather. Don't know if he's still with AccuWeather, but I recognize the name anyway.
It's funny that's on Forbes because the next storm behind Isaac is called Tropical Depression Invest. Invest.
Yeah. So they are. It looks like he's with something now called Weather Bell. Anyway, I'll put a link to this article in the show notes at PIDradio.com so you can take a look at this
How
as well.
How could the one behind Isaac be Invest? That's another I. How strange.
I don't know.
Should be a J, shouldn't it?
Unless that's a Pacific storm.
Oh, it could be. No, it's listed under Atlantic storms. I don't know.
You have to look that up. Anyway, the... headline to the piece that they've written says Tropical Storm Isaac should rival Hurricane Katrina. Computer models are showing not a lot of agreement. You know, there's a wide range of potential developments over the next few days, but they are expecting it to make landfall somewhere between Panama City, Florida, and Lake Charles, Louisiana. And
The advice that we have, at least that I have, is fill up your gas tank.
Yes, because one of the potential consequences of this is that the oil production, oil production in the Gulf is going to be disrupted. I would imagine that platform operators, oil producers in the Gulf are evacuating
and refineries.
And refineries along the Gulf Coast, which is where many of them are, right? And I'm looking at the forecast models, and at least a couple of them bring them right across East Central Illinois, which is where we've got a major Marathon refinery.
Although no.
I would imagine by the time it gets up to Illinois,
it's almost the only one we have here in this state.
It'll bring Wood River, Illinois, I think would be the other. Would bring a lot of much needed rain here to Illinois. Mm-hmm. Too late to save the corn crop, but might help fill out the soybeans a little bit. Is what I'm told. But oil, gasoline, and natural gas futures prices soared towards the end of last week as estimates of potential damage started to come in. So, hurricane damage inflicted by Katrina caused oil prices to increase from mid-60s per barrel to over $70 a barrel. Gasoline prices at the pump rocketed to near $5 a gallon in some areas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They were. I remember in Missouri, they jumped from around $2.50 to $5 really fast,
mm-hmm.
like the next day.
Yep. Gulf of Mexico currently accounts for 23% of American oil production and 7% of natural gas output. Furthermore, roughly 30% of natural gas processing plant capacity and 44% of U.S. refining capacity is located along the Gulf Coast. So that is something to keep in mind. Not to mention, of course, that's not to take anything away from the human cost of people whose lives and livelihoods will be disrupted over the next few mm-hmm. days. So
please pray for everybody who
yes.
lives down that way.
Amen to that. Speaking of natural gas, by the way, in the petroleum business, shifting
Honey,
to,
it's not
to the
me.
Middle East.
It's Sam.
That's what we get for feeding him human food from time to time. There's an interesting article in an online site called The Commentator, thecommentator.com, looking at the coming conflict between Israel and Iran. I think a lot of people assume that Russia, which has been a longtime supporter of Iran and sort of its go-to country for weaponry and technical expertise. I mean, Russians were helping to build the Bushehr nuclear power plant and so forth. Assume that Russia's involvement would draw the bear into a conflict between Iran and Israel. And certainly there are prophecy scholars who look at this and say this could be the way in which Gog of Magog has the hooks set in his jaw
mm-hmm.
to be pulled into conflict.
Russia.
If indeed that is Russia. That's not universally accepted. But this article speculates that Russia may have, in fact, sold out Iran and will not come to Iran's aid so that they can negotiate a deal with Israel for some of the new fields of natural gas that Israel has discovered in the Mediterranean. The so-called, what is it, the Leviathan field?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which Israel is developing with its partner in Cyprus. Russia's economy and its recovery from the aftermath of privatization during the Boris Yeltsin years, in which the Russian economy was sort of taken over by mobsters,
mm-hmm.
Has been built on Russia's energy supremacy on the Eurasian continent. Russia controls most of the natural gas mm-hmm. that flows into Europe. And they have played that card a couple of times, especially to bring Ukraine to its knees.
Mm-hmm.
There's some speculation, which we never really talked about, that you remember a couple of years ago, a tragic plane crash that basically took out most of the senior government officials of Poland?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. That was somehow related to some energy squabbles between the Poles and the Russians. So this development in the Mediterranean, where Israel is apparently on the verge of exploiting a huge natural gas find, could be enough of a lure to draw Russia actually into an alliance with Israel.
You just said it. A lure.
Oh. Hmm.
A hook in the jaw doesn't mean that he's going to beat them over the head. He's going to lure them, tempt them.
Hmm. Well, it's an interesting thought. Perhaps Russia's perhaps Russia would decide not to come to Russia's aid, but perhaps to try to
Iran's aid. You mean
to Iran's aid, right? To take Israel
right.
for its own.
Right. It may play both sides for a while until it, you know, realizes that it's Israel trusts him, and I don't trust Putin. I have to tell you.
No, he's shrewd. There's no question about that. And according to this article at The Commentator, he is encouraging Gazprom and other Russian energy companies to learn as much as they can, as quickly as they can, about fracking, hydraulic fracturing, which is basically the means by which the United States has unlocked a lot of petroleum potential petroleum reserves here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Our gas prices, thanks to these new finds over the last year, have dropped by 55%.
But you've also, speaking of dropped, you also have literal sinkholes that are appearing in states all over our country. And you've got earthquakes in odd spots.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some who believe that this fracking is literally fracturing and destroying our geological strata.
And there are claims that people who live close to these fields now have, oil and oilier
and fire coming out of their taps.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
No,
you don't.
Yeah, if you want your face on fire, you want it to be from Sharon's chili or mega nachos. I mean, that's a good thing. But this is an interesting development that may affect the way things play out in the Middle East. Again, Europe has been very anti-fracking to this point. And that has played into Russia's hands because while Europe doesn't have much in the way of oil below the ground, which is why the Germans, Nazi Germany during World War II, had to fuel its planes and tanks and its military vehicles with oil derived from coal.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have a lot of shale below the ground.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
If they began to use the same technology that the United States has been using to unlock this natural gas below the surface, and I see fracking tanks about once a week, twice a week on Interstate 57 north and south here in Illinois. It's being used here in Illinois now. The Europeans could begin to wean themselves off of Russian gas. So.
He won't allow that to happen.
He won't allow that to happen.
If there's any way that he can maintain the power,
right.
Because that is his power base.
And as long as he can keep the gas flowing to Europe in order to dissuade them from exploiting their own resources, then I think he'll try to do that. And so, again, that may lead to some interesting developments in the relationship between Russia and Israel.
The spice must flow.
Yeah.
Well, while we're in the Middle East, let's talk about what's going on in Syria. We've got the U.S., the U.K., and the French who are standing by to seize Syrian chemical weapons. That's according to Debka File. We also have the CIA literally handing over 14 Stinger missiles to the rebels so they could take out warplanes. That's according to the Mirror
in
the U.K. In Syria. Our CIA has smuggled in 14 Stinger missiles.
Oh, we learned nothing from Afghanistan.
No,
we gave the Taliban Stingers back in the 70s so they could shoot down Russian helicopters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And those are
is a replay of Afghanistan. And in the meantime, what we didn't have before, we had a lot of secular heads of state when we went into Afghanistan and Iraq. Now we have the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah. There and in Libya, and we don't even know, not that we knew in Libya, but we don't know who the rebels really are in Syria.
No, we don't, and I'll tell you what, Morsi, who is the president in Egypt, and he is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, has been going around and glad-handing the other Arabs in the area.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to essentially proselytize everybody.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Not in the way aliens do, though.
There's a theory out there that this too is petroleum related, even though Syria doesn't have any domestic oil or gas resources to speak of. There are pipelines that cross Syria, and there's a theory that perhaps this is being driven by the Turks and by NATO, who want the pipeline at Homs, which has been the target of a number of attacks, to continue on northward into Turkey rather than westward.
Libya.
Yeah. Well, no, westward from Syria to the Mediterranean.
They have to go through Libya?
Libya's on the north coast of Africa. Syria is around...
Oh, sorry, not Libya, Lebanon. See, it's my drugs.
Yeah. No, that would already be past Lebanon, be north of Lebanon.
But Russia, now this is true, I'm not crazy on this one, Russia does have access to a Syrian port.
That's correct.
There's a reason why they did that. It wasn't because we like it here. It's such a pretty place to park our trucks.
Yeah, it's...
And our trucks. Yeah. It's a port.
Yeah.
Our ships.
Yeah, the inland port.
Oh, it's really starting to peak now. It should be fun from here on out.
Tartus is the name of the port city.
Tartus?
Tartus, T-A-R-T-U-S.
Time and relative dimension in space? Time and relative.
Tartus, yeah.
Time.
Yeah.
Not Tartarus, though. That's no good.
Yeah. Last Russian military base outside the former Soviet Union, by the way. So they're not likely to give it up. It is, I think, their only warm water port, if I'm not mistaken.
Vladimir Putin essentially wants to rule the entire European continent, and that includes Asia Minor.
Hmm.
And the Middle East, if he can get at it.
Yeah. And according to this, news from RIA Novosti in Moscow, this was reported 2 days ago on the 24th, Russia has suspended the use of its naval facility at Tartus, but not planning to abandon it altogether. But they did say that they will not use military force to defend or protect the port.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I wonder why that is. What game is he playing?
It makes you wonder. I mean, clearly, if they intended to defend it, they certainly wouldn't. They wouldn't necessarily come right out and say it. This was clearly something that was released for public consumption. But Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that he does not believe military support for the Assad regime is the main aim currently. Because he believes there are chances of reaching national reconciliation in Syria.
What is this article? You can look there now with me. Come along.
Me.
We'll just journey through this internet together. The interwebs. Debka.com, their main story. Al-Qaeda targets Riyadh, Jeddah, and Sderot. Saudi cell had chemicals. For the first time, a thread links the three rockets which hit the Israeli town of Sderot on Sunday, August the 26th, slightly injuring two workmen, and the two terrorist cells captured in Riyadh and Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, on the same day. Dibka files counter-terror sources report. Both events were conceived by al-Qaeda in the Arab Peninsula.
Right, right.
Yeah. So what's this little meme that we're being told again? It's just, you know, name the enemy of the week.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Muslim Brotherhood, who I hate to say is, you know,
it's the wellspring from which Al Qaeda and other radical Islamic groups.
Yeah, I think in many ways it is. You know, speaking of that, we've talked before about how the Muslim Brotherhood can be traced historically back
to the SS.
To the SS, exactly.
Yep.
You saw at a lake just south of where we live.
I'm glad you
reminded
me of that.
A really strange image.
And I posted this in the PID Radio Cafe at Facebook. It's weird. It looks like it's a stenciled image. So it was spray painted from a stencil. So clearly this is some design or graphic or logo that's been used before and will be used again.
But it's very intricate, too.
Yeah. It looks somewhat like a dollar sign against a backdrop of, it almost looks like woven reeds or something. I can't tell what the background pattern is supposed to be, but it looks like a dollar sign.
Well, it looks like an S.
But did you notice that the three vertical
lines
behind it? So it looks like a dollar sign. Might be a letter S, might be a dollar sign. Haven't figured it out. We've not heard from anyone yet who can identify this logo. But inside the letter S are the words Arbeit macht frei, which roughly translated from German means
work will make you free.
Yeah, and it was the slogan that was over the entrance to Auschwitz and other World War II concentration camps, which is really
it's
creepy.
It's a chilling phrase, yes. And why anyone who knows history would put that up there.
Yeah, it is bizarre. And this was on a column supporting a little pavilion at Lake Sarah near Effingham, Illinois. Well-maintained, the pavilion, the grounds, very well-maintained, a very scenic lake.
There's not much. Just so you know, we're not saying that this was put there by the people who run Lake Sarah.
No, absolutely not.
It's a beautiful, family-friendly area, really pretty. We suspect that someone just went there when no one was around, and the groundskeeper hadn't caught it yet.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely, it would be painted over soon, I hope.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I know that there's an effort being made now to contact the governing authority there to alert
them
to
know.
This. And
I'm betting whoever is in charge is really bizarre.
Send a note to Russ Dizdar, and Russ was aware that it was the slogan used over the World War II German concentration camps, but has not come across it in his work with victims of DID, the dissociative identity disorder, multiple personality folks that victims that he's worked with.
Because sometimes the personalities, there's at least one who identifies as German.
That's right. That's right. So he's talking to some folks that have come out of that life, and asking if they've seen anything about it. I don't know. It even went to some websites of some groups that track hate groups that I believe have a vested interest in making sure the American public is constantly on the alert for the threat posed by angry white people. And they don't even report any known hate groups in this part of Illinois. So I honestly don't know what to make of it. It was really a weird discovery to stumble on. And if you visit the PID Radio Cafe, if you just scroll, just search, you'll find the picture.
When you really sent weird. That to me, I started looking up on the internet trying to find if there was anything that, looked even close to that. Sadly, I found a number of people who had seemed very proud of their Arbeit macht frei tattoos.
That is disturbing.
Yeah.
How quickly we forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, speaking of the threat posed by radicalized homegrown terrorists, which is a meme that we keep hearing from the Department of Homeland Security.
Yes, angry white men.
Angry white men, and especially, angry returning soldiers.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
They know how to use weapons, and they're angry, and so on. Is this story that came out about a week ago that government agencies that you wouldn't normally expect to be involved in the business of security buying lots and lots of ammunition, and not just ammunition, but buying hollow point rounds.
Yeah,
there's only one reason to purchase a hollow point round, and that's if you want to shoot somebody and cause maximum damage. Because when the hollow point bullet strikes a human body, it basically flattens the tip, and it gets bigger. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it gets bigger, and just tears through the body and creates a big hole. It is something you use when you want to
take down an elephant.
Really hurt someone.
Yeah, you're not trying to wound somebody to stop them. You're trying to kill someone.
Exactly. And these agencies, and this is what was really shocking about this, is that 174,000 rounds were purchased by the Social Security Administration. The Social Security Administration, 174,000 hollow point bullets to be delivered to 41 locations in major cities across the United States.
Let me just bring up something that may or may not be connected. It just came out that the Social Security Administration has begun docking seniors' checks if they owe student loan money. Now imagine, seriously, imagine being on a fixed income.
Yeah.
And suddenly an extra, say, $100 is taken out of your check.
Uh-huh.
Your check's not that big to start with. That $100 may be the difference between life and death to that senior. Now imagine that grandma telling her grandson about it.
Yeah.
grandson yeah. decides to go over the Social Security Administration and straighten him out.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying that that's what's but isn't feared
this,
here. But
isn't this what we have police for? I mean, why does the Social Security Administration have armed agents?
They want to put guns in schools. Did you not see that story? That well, they want to put rifles in schools.
Well, this wasn't even the one that surprised me the most. I mean, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, the National Weather Service, ordered 46,000 rounds of hollow point ammunition.
Well, of course.
Of course.
Well, how else are you gonna tame that storm? If we can just get down there on the coast now and start shooting at Isaac. Ike Clanton.
That is unbelievable. 174,000 rounds to the Social Security Administration, 46,000 rounds to NOAA. Let's see here. What is the total quantity of ammunition here?
Lots.
Oh, okay. In March of this year. Okay, here's the key paragraph. The Department of Homeland Security, which you would expect would have a need for guns.
Mm-hmm.
They ordered 750 million rounds of hollow point ammunition and then turned around and ordered an additional 750 million rounds of miscellaneous bullets, including some capable of penetrating walls. This is my 88 Magnum. It shoots through schools.
Johnny.
Shouldn't make me angry, Johnny.
That's two bullets for every dollar in the TARP bailout.
And four bullets for every man, woman, and child in the United States. This is from an article written by a fellow named Jerry Curry, who is a decorated combat veteran, Army aviator, paratrooper, and ranger, who has got 40 years of service into the country. An article published at thedailycaller.com under the title, "Who Does the Government Intend to Shoot?" Now, we are not generally...
we're not like that at all, just so you know. We
alarmists.
Don't have any guns in our house, and we don't... I don't...
Well, and generally speaking...
I personally don't believe in... want to ever hold a gun. Right. I just don't.
No, I can
I
see circumstances...
But I believe in the right to have them.
And I would see circumstances in which I would mm-hmm. be convinced...
Yeah.
To be honest with you, if we'd stayed in Columbia, Missouri a whole lot longer, I probably...
There were a lot of people with guns on those streets.
Well, and
a lot of people.
Sadly, some that were not licensed to carry.
Well, exactly. But, I'm not talking about the ones who kept them for defense.
Right.
We're talking about gang shooting.
Right, right. But in this case, yeah, I don't...
If we lived in Chicago, we'd probably want one because every
sure.
day the Drudge Report touts the number of deaths overnight in Chicago.
Right. You know, even the sports talk radio station up there has gotten in on the act where they were mocking a recent news article. They were mocking Rahm Emanuel, actually, for a recent news article that came out in which he had conversations with Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the National Football League, about someday holding the Super Bowl in Chicago. And these guys on the sports talk station were, Mr. Mayor, don't you think we should do something about the 7 people being shot to death every weekend in Chicago first?
So, well, we'll get rid of them.
Yeah. But anyway, and typically we're not alarmists when it comes to
the
threat of government, violence against American citizens. And there are places on the web where you can get your fill of that sort of adrenaline rush if that's what you like. But this is somewhat disturbing that the government, between the Department of Homeland Security and other agencies like the National Weather Service, have ordered over 800 million
rounds. I know, but let's step back and take a look at what we're being told to think by these articles.
Mm-hmm.
These articles are appearing in mainstream media.
Yeah.
These are AP stories,
mm-hmm.
Reuters stories. These are online and at the major UK newspapers. So why are we being told we should fear our government, that they are coming after us? Because they want us to be afraid.
Well,
I think they do. I think they want to stir up some sort of enmity between us and the federal government so that that's the excuse if something bad were to happen. And praise the Lord, please, Lord, let nothing bad happen to anyone in our government. I don't want to see anybody hurt.
Sure. And that raises another interesting story, by the way, that apparently has been defused, but this is an interesting story floated by a fellow who calls himself the Ulster Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who writes blogs.
May or may not be a genuine article. But
yeah, it's hard to verify because he cites anonymous sources, and he himself is anonymous.
It's the kind of stuff that a disinfo agent would do.
Yeah. But the reason I kind of took this somewhat seriously was because he reported quite some time back, and I think we talked about it on PID Radio.
We've talked about him before,
that the Ulsterman had written from a source he calls the White House Insider about basically an internal power struggle taking place in the White House between Valerie Jarrett, who he contends, this White House Insider, is the real president of the United States, Valerie Jarrett, and on the one hand, and then Leon Panetta, Bill Daley, who has since resigned as the chief of staff, and Hillary Clinton on the other side, over the raid to take out Osama bin Laden. Valerie Jarrett apparently had vetoed the plan to go after bin Laden several times because of the potential political fallout. She was afraid that fallout, if something bad were to happen, like the disastrous attempt to rescue the American hostages in Iran during the Carter administration, where they had to abandon a helicopter in the desert because of mechanical issues. She was afraid of something like that happening. And finally, I guess Panetta, Clinton, and Daley just went around Jarrett, and they went ahead with the raid. There's a new book out by a fellow named I've got his last name, and I can't remember his first name, and I want to get this right. It's the book is called The Amateur.
Oh, yes.
About Barack Obama's presidency. The author's last name is Miniter. And I believe it's Richard, but I want to confirm that. And he basically confirms the story based on interviews that he conducted with people inside the White House that, yes, this really did happen. So the Ulsterman and his White House insider had the story a year before it appeared in print in a mass market publication. So apparently it's been vetted, and it looks like our interwebs have gone on the blink here. So I'm not going to be able to get this fellow's name quickly.
I've been able to get stuff. Yeah.
I'm just getting a little spinning circle. Oh, there we go.
Just doesn't like you.
That's very possible.
But I just want to remind people, you know, when you see stories like this, don't run off screaming, got to do this, got to do that. They're all out to get me. Trust me on this. If Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, there's no reason to fear. Yeah.
Leading from Behind is the name of the book. Leading from Behind by Richard Miniter.
Okay.
Then there was another one. The Amateur is actually written by
Ed. Okay, let me just finish this thought, though.
Go ahead.
Because this is really important.
Yes.
The things we've been talking about, if you don't have Christ as your Savior, if you do not have that rock, it's like that big storm that's coming at New Orleans. People who would be just on the beach waiting for it to come in and terrified. Mm-hmm. But you can still be on that beach waiting for it to come in, and Jesus Christ hanging on to you. And I got to tell you, anything that happens to you, he will take care of you, no matter what. If you're in Christ's hand, you are in the biggest hand in this whole universe. He will take care of us. He says so many times in the Bible, be not afraid, be not afraid, mm-hmm. fear not, fear not. The angels say it over and over again. It's the one that probably is the most common command in the entire Bible. So what do we do when we instinctively, when we see these stories? There is something in us, in the way that we are, in our fallen nature, that just wants to go, yeah, and start screaming and running all over the place and making all of these preparations, and I'm going to take care of it, and I'm going to get my guns, and I'm going to buy my gold, and I'm going to, you know, make sure that nobody comes in and hurts my family.
Mm-hmm. Depending on our own strength.
Yes.
Instead of on him.
Exactly.
And you're right. And forgive me for getting so fixated on trying to figure out the name of that.
That's okay, honey.
You know, really, really listening to what you were saying. Because that was clearly that's the takeaway from
that
all
is
of this.
The takeaway.
Yeah.
Along with a side of fries.
Freeze dried. And reconstituted.
Yes.
From the extra water that we've
Now, that being said, I don't think that there's anything wrong at all with stocking up on you know, foods and gas and things like that, not to make sure your little fiefdom is taken care of, but to be generous and loving and opening your home for Bible studies and sharing your food and sharing the candles that you have, making sure that the Lord is lifted up even in the darkest of places.
That's right. Because I'll say this again, as I did when talking to Ray Gano of prophezine.com, that he's very knowledgeable about preparedness and really teaches and preaches preparedness, but not so that you can, like in those episodes of The Twilight Zone, where they've got their own little bunker and they're trying to, you know, keep out all, and all the neighbors are panicking and coming over and they're trying to keep everybody out and it turns into a nasty fight. No, it's so that you can share when stuff hits the fan.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is the...
That is the truth, because honestly, as Christians, look at your life and consider all those times when you have had extra, at least in our lives. Usually, if suddenly we have extra, it's because the Lord is going to use it to help someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And while we're talking about that, a few weeks ago, I posted to Facebook that our coffers were dangerously low and that Derek and I simply were not in a position to feed them. In other words, we were worried that we like to make sure there's plenty of money if something happens to us, that everything is going to continue, all of the archives, everything, every guest we've ever had on the show, that all of that stuff, all the websites, all the information, everything will still go on as long as there's money to pay for it. We get a little nervous when we get under $100 in that account, and that's about where it was. I got to tell you, you people stepped up and helped us beyond our wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank each and every one of you. I've tried to faithfully send a note back as soon as I got the notice that you guys had helped us out with our PayPal account. But thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord, for inspiring people to be so kind.
Yeah. What we've done is we basically have linked our web hosting and
to our bank account.
Right.
So if it ever goes low, it just comes directly out of our bank account.
And the domain re-registration to automatically come out
Everything
of
the
PayPal
comes
account.
Out of PayPal, but if PayPal ever goes zero, it automatically comes out of our bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank account was a little lean at that time.
Yeah.
Because we had many, many things that had required that we put out some money.
Yeah. So essentially, if... and we pray that it happens. The Lord returns soon. Then the PayPal deductions will continue automatically, and the archives, the information, the websites will be online for, it's the best we can do to prepare, at least, to keep that information archived and online.
It is. And that being said, you know what? When you make comments to any of our stories, we try not to have people link to things in the comments, because all too often those are linking to sites that, frankly, we don't have any business looking at. But if you put scripture, if you put comments that, you know, share your personal testimony, those are there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it'll be preserved for as long as
the Lord
holds
keeps
out,
in there.
Or as long as the government decides that it's going to let the website stand.
Well, you know, the Lord's in charge of that. We'll let him do that.
I'm going to put in another plug for a novel that I've read for the second time here. And this is about the second time in the last 3 or 4 years that I've read it, because it's really entertaining, really well written, and I want to read more by this author. His name is Lars Walker. He's, from what I can tell from his website, he is a student of Viking culture, but he's also a Christian, and he wrote a book back around 1999, which was published by Bain Publishing, BAEN, which is a science fiction imprint. And, you know, God love him for publishing the book, because it's an overtly Christian novel. But he includes some interesting aspects of Viking history, He mentions the Kensington Stone in Minnesota.
Yes.
Which most experts believe is a fake.
Yeah.
There
are some who say it is not a fake.
There are some who say it's not, but most of the official experts, most of the experts who adhere to, well, let's just say most scholars who studied it don't believe it's genuine. It purports to hold to be a
record. You should have a guest on talking about it. You should have Lars on.
I should try to get in touch with him. Anyway, it gets into some really neat stuff. It also brings in Odin,
mm-hmm.
who's coming back, at least in the novel.
Odin, Osiris.
Yeah. Some really interesting stuff. But he also writes this against a background of an American society that is going the direction now, as we see it now, 13 years, 14 years after he wrote it, is going down the path that he wrote in this novel, which is called Wolf Time, which refers to the wolf Fenris, mm-hmm. which is will have its ultimate conflict mm-hmm. with Odin someday. So he manages to get the gospel in there.
I thought the wolf was Loki.
No, Loki was the trickster god.
Oh, that's right.
Right. So he gets the gospel in there. He gets some Viking history in there. He's got this American culture in which the mainstream denominations have moved so far away from the gospel that they're not recognizable anymore. But we can recognize the direction that the denominations in Wolf Time have gone in some of the denominations we see here in America today, like the Episcopal Church and United Church of Christ, which are, you know, embracing alternate forms of, even some mainstream denominations embracing alternate forms of spirituality and bringing.
Why, like an apostasia?
Yes, exactly. And interestingly, he's got something in here called the Defense of Religion Act, which in the course of the story unfolding in the novel is passed and defended by the president. And essentially what it says is that the United States government has to authorize religions for them to be afforded the type of First Amendment protections that we sort of many of us still take for granted today.
Hmm.
You know, so anyway, just some really interesting stuff. And it's a very thoughtful writer and a very exciting read as well. And this is the really cool thing. It's free. And there is a Kindle version. It's available at the Bain Online Library. Bain has made a number of books from its authors available for free. You can read it online. You can download it in a Kindle or EPUB version or a PDF version, I believe. I'll put a link to it because I really, if you enjoy a good science fiction story with some really,
doesn't?
Yeah, with some great characters, but also a healthy dose of some really interesting history and Norse mythology. But of course, if you're a longtime listener to PID Radio or A View from the Bunker, you know that the Norse mythology, like the ancient Sumerian mythologies and the Greek and Roman mythology, have a basis in reality.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's really a fascinating read, well worth doing. And yeah, I will try to get a hold of Lars Walker. I mean, it's been a long time since he's written that book, but I don't have a lot of time for recreational reading anymore. I used to, in high school, I was one of those kids who'd be up till 4 a.m. reading sci-fi novels when I should have been sleeping, getting ready for school the next day.
You still do that?
Not so much.
I'll see that little, you know, he's got one of those little 8-inch, 7-inch tablets.
Yeah.
I'll see the warming, glowing.
Yeah, except that it's turning off now at like 10:30 or 11 instead of at 4.
Well, that's true.
So,
that's true.
But this is a novel that I've read twice now in the last couple of 3 years because I just find it really interesting and there's a lot of there. It makes you think. So, yeah, Lars Walker, Wolf Time.
Want to think.
Yeah, good stuff. I'll put a link to that in the show notes too at PIDradio.com.
Well, good idea. How long have we gone?
We have gone just about 1 hour.
How about that?
So,
must be time for another pill.
And since I was out doing some yard work today, I'm probably going to need one before I go to bed tonight, too. we just pray for the folks in the Gulf Coast and ask for your prayers there as well. If you go back to our 2005 archives, you'll probably find the interview with our friend.
Who went down there to help out afterward.
Yeah. And John, forgive me, I'm not the Jesus geek.
Wilkerson?
John Wilkerson. Thank you. You remembered the name this time.
I know. I don't know where it came from.
Went down to Bay St. Louis to help with the cleanup, and his report The aftermath of Katrina was that it was just more horrific than you could possibly imagine. So we just pray that the Gulf Coast is spared another hit like that.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivs 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.